Hi, Laura Rawlings here, and welcome to the Radio Academy podcast. This week is Mental Health Awareness Week, and the theme of this year's campaign is anxiety. Now, radio and audio is the home of some of the most passionate and driven professionals in the creative sector. And we all feel anxious in our work from time to time. Anxiety is a totally normal emotion in all of us, whether that's the pressure to deliver day in, day out, our career prospects, our work-life balance, our working relationships, or anything else. At the Radio Academy, we want to learn how we can support colleagues feeling anxiety in their work lives. And to do that, we'd like to hear your stories of your experiences so that we can get together the right resources and right experts to provide some help. There's a form on our website. It's totally confidential if you want it to be, but we'd really appreciate hearing what you're going through or have gone through in the past. This week's podcast episode might provide some stimulus, something to reflect on. The presenters at Absolute Radio have sat down to talk about their own experiences with mental health and anxiety for two special programmes they've called Time to Listen. We're grateful to them for doing that and for sharing those programmes with us. There are two programmes, both are on our website now for you to listen to, and we're sharing one of them here as this week's podcast. So I'll hand over now to Claire Sturgis and her colleagues, Baylen Leonard, Leona Graham and Jay Lawrence. Thanks for listening.
This is Absolute Radio, and the following programme contains conversation about mental health, grief, anxiety and depression. If you need support in these areas, please visit absoluteradio.co.uk/time to listen. Or if you need urgent support, please call the Samaritans on 116 123.
Absolute Radio. Time to listen.
This is Time to Listen on Absolute Radio for Mental Health Awareness Week. I'm Claire Sturgis, and for the next hour, we're going to do something we've never done on the station before. We're going to talk about anxiety, what it is, how it affects people, and how you can cope with it. But we're going to do it slightly differently. Anxiety can affect us all, and it can affect us in so many different ways. It doesn't matter who you are or what your job is. So I'm going to be joined by members of the Absolute Radio team, the family, Baylen Leonard, Leona Graham and Jay Lawrence, who'll be sharing their stories of anxiety and what they've done to manage it. We'll also be joined by Wendy Robinson from CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, who will be able to offer expert advice because we're not trained, but like you, we have our own stories to tell. And you can join in the conversation too on our socials at Absolute Radio. And if you need help, you can find out lots of information and where to get support. That's on our website at absoluteradio.co.uk/time to listen.
This is Time to Listen on Absolute Radio.
Wendy, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you briefly tell us what you do for the CALM charity?
Yeah, so CALM, which stands for Campaign Against Living Miserably, does exactly what it says. We're there to try and support people. I'm responsible for the services part of it, which is there to really think about how we can help people with loads of mental health challenges, as anxiety is one.
In the UK, 125 people die by suicide each week, a staggering 18 people a day. 75% of these suicides are male. And if you're struggling, then please remember this number. It's really important and puts you directly in contact with a member of the CALM team. It's 0800 58 58 58. That's 0800 58 58 58. So joining me today are fellow presenters Jay Lawrence, Leona Graham and Baylen Leonard. First of all, I'm going to ask you all today, how are you doing?
Good, thank you, Sturge.
Good.
Glad to be here.
Well, thank you so much for agreeing to do this, because, I mean, it's a big deal, isn't it, Jay?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you, actually. I felt all right about it, but in the first, like, the last 5 minutes, it's kind of ironic, really. I feel sort of anxious about talking about anxiety, in a way.
My mouth has gone suddenly very dry. Baylen, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm actually, maybe excited isn't the right word, but I think it's so great to be able to talk about this stuff with people that, you know, from my perspective, you look at and think everybody's got it all together, and then you realize just below the surface everybody's the same and everybody's dealing with something. So I think it's a great thing.
Hopefully we can help some people. Jay, can we start with you? Is that okay?
Of course, yeah.
I know you have been very open and honest about your
personal dealings with mental health and anxiety. So how have the last couple of years been for you?
2020 wasn't the best, I think for obvious reasons. And that was actually probably the sort of the first time that I thought to myself, oh, actually, I might sort of be living with, you know, like a low-level anxiety. And it wasn't until then that I actually looked back years earlier and realised, you know, what was happening at that point as well. I think sometimes my anxiety is acutely work-related. Now, that is not saying that I, you know, anything particular about work, but what it means is that I feel almost, I think guilt is the word that I can think about. I think, you know, at the moment, you know, I work in the evenings, I work late at night, and, you know, back when I was, you know, trying to get into radio and all of that, you know, I was working here, working there, and there might be like a Wednesday, let's say, where I wasn't working, and I felt so much guilt, like I should be doing something. And it wasn't until, you know, maybe a year or so ago that I actually realised, oh, actually, you know, that probably kicked off in 2013 or, you know, 2014, really. And I remember, actually, because Sundays were the only days that I could feel okay, because Sundays are like, you know, the chill day. Do you know what I mean? I could put the football on and I can relax. But every other day, including Saturdays, I felt like I should be doing something, and I felt anxious. So that's when I literally have to put on my really chunky noise-cancelling headphones and put on some ASMR. I'm that guy that puts on ASMR, listening to people whisper in the ears. If it sounds weird, it is a bit weird if you're not used to it, but it does help. Or I put on music or something like that. And then sometimes, a lot of the time actually, I don't even play anything. I just have it on and it's almost just silence. And
I do that on the train.
Yeah,
and it just need to kind of block things out.
It is. Sometimes I don't want to listen to anything.
When you said you felt guilty about not doing something in the day, what kind of things did you think that you should be doing?
Oh, that's a good point. I don't know. It's
so did you feel you should be working?
I should be working. Because, so for example, you know, I'm on at 10 p.m, right? So I'm on at 10 p.m. Now, if I'm on during the day, I don't feel that guilt because I'm working in the day. If I'm working in the evening, I'm like, well, everyone else is working. You know, like my other half nearly always works from home. So she's working from home. I'm not working. I need to be doing something. I need to be helping my career or something. Do you know what I mean? Especially in this industry, you know, I feel like I should be. You've got a very good question there, Leona. What should I be doing? Yeah. Well, that's another reason why
so
I feel anxious.
So you feel bad about sort of sitting down and watching a programme, having your evening?
I don't really do that.
You won't do it?
I don't do that much because I feel like I shouldn't be. You know, I feel like, I shouldn't be doing this. So I try and be busy in whatever way. So your question of, you know, what should you be doing? That question alone is what I would be worrying about.
Wendy, you were going to say something.
It was when you were talking about actually putting on your headphones and that being something that cancels the world out. And I think that's a really brilliant way of describing it, because that's what anxiety often is. It's like our minds are always wanting to look out for danger. Now, let's remind ourselves that that's a good thing. But unfortunately, it's not necessarily always working to our best advantage. So it's looking constantly. What's wrong here? What am I not doing? Is there danger? So with you, it might be, is there a danger? I'm not doing enough. I'm not doing the best for my career. So it's a good thing that's gone a little bit awry. So anything that you can do that's like, you know, resting or exercise, being out in nature, cancelling the world out, just gives your brain that rest.
I think a lot of people can relate to what you're saying about feeling like you should be doing something, and not just kind of in the industry that we're all in, where you're kind of for years struggling and striving to get anything, and then when you do get it, you never feel like you've got it forever. And I think a lot of people in a lot of different jobs and industries feel that way, because there's something about society that means if you don't have job security, even if you do have a job, but you don't have kind of lifelong job security, which very few people do, you constantly feel like it could be taken away, and then what do I do? And I think that that's something that a lot of people can relate to, and it just means that all of us end up not relaxing ever.
Yeah. Anxiety generally is a fear for the future. It's things that we're worried might happen. And sometimes it's based on actually things have happened in the past. So, of course, you know, if you have struggled because you didn't have a job, or you know, obviously at the moment for people, financial stuff is a really big thing. But quite often anxiety is really worried about what might happen. It's fear-based. I mean, at Calm, when we hear from people, quite often they're letting us know that they're just struggling with general life issues and challenges that become overwhelming. Because, as I said before, anxiety happens to everybody all the time. But once it starts happening regularly, sort of overwhelming, and starts to shape your life, then that's when perhaps you need to say, actually, I might need to get some help and talk to somebody about this, because actually life's not meant to be like that.
The anxiety that I feel, I think, is definitely over what might happen in the future.
Jay, before I ask you to choose a song, I just want to say I really identified with, because I work evenings as well and at weekends, so I used to worry about not working when I wasn't on the radio. But the way I cope with that now is, you know, I am going to watch that TV show, I'm going to binge something on Netflix, I'm going to go to the cinema, because it's all content.
So technically still working.
Still working.
It is still working. Go to the cinema, go and train, go for a walk, you know, it's all content.
That means tax deductible.
Yes.
Catch up on our Time to Listen series at absoluteradio.co.uk or on the free Absolute Radio app.
If you're currently having a difficult time and need any help or guidance, then you can head to absoluteradio.co.uk/timetolisten, where you can find support and links to charities like Mind, the Samaritans, and of course Calm as well. And remember, you're not alone. The organisation Mental Health First Aid England estimate that 1 in 4 people each year experience mental health issues at any one time. 792 million people are affected by mental health issues worldwide. Wendy, if I can come back to you and talk about some misconceptions that can surround mental health. And again, we're getting these stats from Mental Health First Aid. So, for example, people with mental ill health are more dangerous to themselves than to others. 80 to 90% of people who die by suicide are experiencing mental distress. That really upsets me, reading that.
Yeah, I think it's good to challenge that idea that if somebody is struggling, they're going to hurt you. Actually, a lot of mental health stuff, it is turning in on ourselves. Mm. It's us trying to hurt ourselves because we don't feel good enough. We feel we've failed in some way. Certainly what we know at Calm about suicide and suicide feelings, it's not necessarily that somebody doesn't want to be alive anymore. They don't want to be alive like this anymore. They can't cope with all the kind of pressures that are on them. Often they feel like a burden. They feel that people would be better off without them. And all of that is all inside your head. And so really one of the big things, whether it be anxiety or any mental health matter, talk to somebody. Talk to somebody you trust. Let them know how you're feeling. Because you stay locked in your mind goes round in loops and doesn't necessarily help you out.
You said there, Wendy, about talking to people. I've had two sort of sets of therapy over the years, which I found enormously helpful. About sort of 2017, 2018, I lost 3 people very close to me in quick succession within a year. So I went to grief counselling, which was really helpful because I'd never had to deal with grief. And through that grief counselling, which did help, I think what it did was take off a layer of my protection. And a few months after completing that therapy, I could feel something wasn't right. And I can't put a finger on what it was, but I just wasn't myself. I couldn't find any joy, anything. I was socially, and this was before lockdown, I didn't want to go out, didn't want to see people. I needed to keep very close. And it got so bad at one point, I ran away, which sounds really stupid. I actually ran away from home because I couldn't cope. It was early in the morning. I'd just come back from the gym. I felt empty and I was outside the house. I put down my bag that had my phone and my keys and everything, my purse, and I just ran away, just ran down the road. And poor Mark, my partner, didn't know what to do. So he and my neighbours and one of my best friends were driving around Camden looking for me. In fact, I had eventually run to my doctor's surgery and was that time on the floor in reception crying because I didn't know what to do. Sorry.
That's all right.
Sorry.
Take a moment.
Do you know what's like, obviously incredibly emotional.
But I ran away, Wendy. Ran away.
But the thing I was going to say about that is that really that's like how brilliant our bodies and minds are in many ways. Because what you were saying, you maybe, you know, you had a part of you had to shout really loud. And sometimes if we're not hearing it, our bodies kind of take over. You were running away, which to me was saying, I can't deal.
I can't deal with this.
And I need to get out of this and get somewhere else. So although it's awful and we end up, and again, it's that pressure we put on ourselves. But I think it's like, we've got some wisdom in ourselves and in our bodies and in what we feel and how we feel. And it's about listening to that. And then, you know, then maybe we don't end up getting to these extreme things where we're feeling like we do have to run away. But I think that's a kind of, I don't know, there's something really poetic. It didn't feel like it at the time, but makes sense to me.
Well, now I'm pleased I did, because obviously I ended up at the doctor's surgery. The doctor, of course, suggested some more therapy really quickly. And so I did. So I got a more general therapy. What came out of that was the fact that, and again, it's quite embarrassing to admit this, a lot of my anxiety, that was affecting me so badly at that point had come from the past decade or so. I'd been in quite a controlling friendship with someone. And it wasn't coercive control, but there was a lot of gaslighting going on. And I didn't even know what gaslighting was. All I remember is that I had to be a good friend and I had to do everything that this person said I had to do. Otherwise, I'd be punished, and I was frequently punished for not being a good enough friend, by being ghosted, by being ignored for a month at a time. And that would destroy me. And Leona, you asked me to try and describe what gaslighting was.
Yeah, could you say again? Because my understanding, Wendy, of
what I went through, in our friendship, I was made to doubt everything I did, from my body size to my fitness levels to my intelligence to the job I do. I doubted everything. I was made to doubt everything. I had no confidence because it didn't match up to what they think it should be. It turned out that in the end, I was friend dumped anyway, so I never got a chance to repair it, and they were gone. Thank goodness, because I think to this day, if they hadn't have gone, I would still probably be in that situation. So I am trying to get to the final point of this, guys. So once I had that, I thought, well, surely now I have that knowledge, I can now deal with my triggers. But there was still something that wasn't quite right. I remember sitting down, I think I had two sessions left, and she said maybe we ought to look at medication, because she said my diagnosis for you is high anxiety and mild depression, which I went, okay, that's fine, but before we do that, I'd like to talk to my GP again, because I wasn't against medication at all, because I think medication used correctly can be very helpful for anxiety. I then, 2 or 3 days later, was listening to a podcast, three women my age talking about makeup and perfume. That's my thing. And one of them very offhandedly just mentioned their perimenopausal symptoms. And literally, that was it. I'm perimenopausal. I was the right age. I went back to the therapist and said, I think I might be perimenopausal. And she said, no, I think you are depressed, so I think you should try the medication. And I said, well, I'm going to say no. I'm going to go and talk to a menopause specialist. And within about 6 or 7 months, I'd had my hormones measured and balanced. I am on HRT, happy to say that, and I now feel great. I still have anxiety, but I know my triggers. I know what to do. I have my little mental health toolbox in my head. So when those triggers come a little bit overwhelming, and they did today, coming in here today on the tube, I had a little cry. I just did my little mental health exercises, and I felt fine. So sorry, that's a very long-winded...
No, no, it's good. Me and you have often talked about that particular topic, haven't we? If I ever have a problem, I often message you immediately. We've got that kind of friendship, haven't we?
And I hope I'm a good listener.
You are a fantastic listener. It's one of the reasons I do come to you. And so our WhatsApp conversation is quite lengthy if you go right back. And I did ask you about that very topic about a year ago, you know, what's going on for us as women. So it was good that I felt that I could come to you with that. So, you know, you have got that kind of warm side to your personality that would make me feel like I could open up that. And it's good to hear your story today and how you came to that.
And it means the world that you're saying that I'm a good friend to you, because I felt I was a terrible friend for many, many years. And I'm not. I'm a good friend.
Oh,
I know
absolutely
I am.
Absolutely. The opposite. You will be the first person I would think of.
Thank you.
And when we come on to my story, I'll explain, you know, what happens with me. And if I do reach out, I often go to you immediately.
And you said yourself that you said that you were embarrassed to say that, you know, talk about that relationship with the person that you were being gaslit. I don't think there's anything embarrassing.
No, it's weird, isn't it? I feel okay talking about it now, but it is embarrassing that I was sort of taken in for so long.
When you took a step back from it, were you able to see it as a whole? Did it need to be pointed out to you?
It did need to be pointed out to me by people I care about. And now, with the benefit of hindsight, I can see how quite often I was sometimes ring-fenced by people I care about just to protect me a little bit.
I think
and that
it can
actually
happen
hurts
in
me.
Families as well.
I think so, Belen. I think so. Yeah.
Toxic friendships where the control is kind of overt. I think it happens in my family, but almost from a loving standpoint, where my family doesn't understand why I would want to. I'm from Tennessee. I obviously live a long way from home and have since I was 18, you know, went to New York and then moved to London. And nobody in my family ever got out of my town, which is fine, but they never understand why I would. So the way that it would manifest itself with them was saying, why don't you just get a job here? Why don't you stay here? Why do you need to go? I don't know how you do all these things. And kind of, not that I need them to applaud anything that I've done, but they certainly don't. They would be just as proud or more proud probably if I stayed at home. And so while it's not exactly the same thing, the way that has kind of manifested itself in my life is that I constantly go, what am I good enough to be? Why? Who do I think I am? You know, going off and doing something that nobody else in my family has done before. Am I good? You know, am I fooling myself? Maybe they're right. You know, I should just not do all that stuff. So it's a different thing, but it feels like the same thing, the same effect.
I think it is, Wendy, because I think the person doing the gaslighting, I'm not saying they're an evil person. I think they certainly now, with the benefit of hindsight and what I experienced and saw, probably had a lot more issues than I realised at the time and probably still do.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying there as well is something about doubting yourself. We doubt ourselves. And again, I think that's a bit of kind of the anxiety quite likes that, that we, you know, a healthy thing is that we should question, is this good for me? Is this right for me? Do I want to go and live there? Is this the right job, the right relationships? All those are good things. But then in that space, if somebody we trust, whether it be a friend and especially like family, that people that we expect are and genuinely are there to protect us, if their worries then become our worries, then you can see where we get really confused and you just don't know what is the right thing. And so that thing of like, how do you come back to yourself and start to think, actually, what do I feel? What do I want? And your example of talking to each other, that, I mean, at Calm, that's one of the big things that we're always talking about. Talk to a mate, tell a mate. So for you, if you're struggling, speak to someone. But if you're the friend and you're not struggling, you're okay. Just keep an eye out for your friends. Check out if they seem to be withdrawing or they seem a little bit more anxious than normal. Just asking each other, are you okay? How are things with you? Just the little questions can open up a massive thing.
I also, as you were saying, Wendy, talking does help. And I found that if I do, because now I know my triggers and I feel at the moment, certainly today, you know, I feel I'm in control of that anxiety. And if I do get anxious, I know what I can do. But that also involves, if I'm out and about and I'm not with people I know, I have been known to talk to strangers. Also, if you do it in Pret a Manger, you quite often get a free coffee. That worked not long ago, actually. So,
well, maybe without knowing it, you're doing something there that's called a grounding technique.
Okay.
So actually where you do something that brings you right into the present.
That's exactly how I feel I'm doing. And I want to be mindful. I want to be here. I want to be now. I want to talk to that person behind the counter about their amazing tattoo. And it makes me feel great.
Yeah, because remember, anxiety is usually about fear of what might happen in the future.
This is Time to Listen on Absolute Radio.
Before we talk to Baylen, Wendy, can we talk about what exactly anxiety is and the different guises it can come in? For example, we've got social anxiety disorder and panic disorder and generalised anxiety disorder, the differences between them?
Yeah, and there are differences. I mean, that term generalised is exactly what it sounds like, general. So it can be where you're feeling worried, scared, restless, you can't sleep, but you don't know exactly what it is. It could be anything and everything. And then there's more specific things where you know absolutely it's a single thing that might be a medical test you're having, or it might be something that's happening in a relationship. But those would still come under that general sense. And then the other ones are kind of described by their title as well. And anxiety can be a component part of more sort of diagnosable conditions like OCD. PTSD. So it's a hard one to say exactly absolutely what it is. But I think the most important thing to think about is, no matter what it is, if it is causing you to feel overwhelmed, for life not to feel worth living, or you feel not good about yourself, that's the time when you need to speak to someone who'll be able to, you know, whether it be a GP or reach out to like a helpline like our own, which should be able to help you talk through what you're experiencing. Labels are good. They can help us feel like, okay, that's what's going on. I can get some help for that. But more importantly, probably, is just talking it through and sharing what's really happening for you, because it is different for everyone.
Baylen, you're next.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us.
It's
from
great
Absolute
to be here.
Radio Country. We love you.
I know, here with the big boy.
last year, as part of our Time to Listen special, you told us a very touching story about your friend Max.
Oh, yeah.
Can you remind us about Max, please?
Max was one of those guys that he just refused to let you not be his friend. You know, and if you were alone somewhere, he would make sure that he went to get you, and suddenly you were in a group. And we met through country music. He ran a country music club night and started it, and contacted me to DJ it. And so we started it, and he ran it, and I would DJ it every time that he put it on. And then just out of the blue, he died from an undiagnosed brain tumor.
I'm so sorry, Baylen.
as you can imagine, it was shocking and it was horrible and inconceivable and unbelievable. You know, when something like that happens, you might as well be told that, you know, that water is red, because it's that unbelievable. But it also makes you reflect on, you know, how great it is to have somebody like that in your life, and it reminds you how precious life is, and kind of all of those cliches that people roll out that don't make you feel better, but as a way of dealing with it, it's kind of the only thing that you can focus on.
Did that affect your mental health, do you think?
It did shine a spotlight on something that I kind of grew up with this, and I think a lot of people have done this, and I envy people who don't grow up like this, but this fear of death. And maybe it was something cultural with being raised in the South of America. We're very Irish in that way. Everybody goes to every funeral. Death is very much not hidden away. It's something that in some ways can be quite helpful, I suppose, because you're not sheltered from something like that. But for me, it made me really fearful. And so I had a belief for ages that I was going to die young. I was petrified of dying. And finally, you know, got past the point where dying young wasn't going to be a problem, because now I'm now old. But
hardly.
What Max's death did in terms of that side of things was it made me worry, if that can happen to Max, who was so full of life and just the absolute picture of health, is there something going on in me that I don't know about? Do I have an undiagnosed? And that sounds so selfish to say, because Max died. But it did start worrying me. You know, anybody could die at any point. And that is a really crippling thing to walk around with in your life. And that, coupled with the grief of losing somebody that you love. We were getting ready to go on Max's stag do for his wedding. You know, like a couple of months after he died. And I don't know that I did actually deal with it, because it brings up not only the way that you feel about that particular person dying, it brings up how you feel about death. Mm. You can spin yourself out into thinking about your own death, and it just becomes this big ball.
Do you find there's pressure, and people say, well, life is short, so you should enjoy it? And I find that almost a pressure, thinking, what should I do to make sure I'm enjoying it?
I absolutely find it a pressure, because that's something that, you know, people say, you know, live every day like it's your last. It's like, well, what if I want to watch Netflix today? You know, like, yeah. I should allow myself to do that. But I can completely empathise with what you're saying when you spin out on thinking about either people that you love dying, or then you're getting worried about yourself dying. My other half calls me a hypochondriac all the time. I say I'm not, even though I probably am slightly.
The same sort of thing.
It's like, you know, I feel slightly off today. What could it be?
Yeah.
You know, I am quite lucky in the way, you know, I had two grandparents that, you know, you could almost prepare the grief. Do you see what I'm, saying? So I would argue that it's a different kind of grief, you know, in my opinion. Like, you know, if you know it's coming, I'm not saying it's any less, but it's less of a shock.
Yeah, I think what we're talking about in many ways is that as human beings, we like to make sense of things. But the idea of living with this sense that, am I going to die right now? Is something going to happen? That's imagine you're trying to cross a road all day long, with traffic just going at you constantly. That's almost like the anxious brain, that it's constantly going, what's going on? What's going to happen to me? And those fears have often come from reality. Something real happened. It wasn't your brain that just made it up and decided to be worried. You actually had to live through something that was truly tragic and truly shocking.
And one of the lovely things about being on Absolute Radio Country is that Max's favourite song that we ended every single club night with was John Denver's Country Roads, Take Me Home. And it was just a
great
big
song, Baylen.
You know, everybody's drunk and
arms around each other
and having a great time. And I would always put it on, and Max would always call me down from the DJ booth, and we would throw our arms around each other and, you know, have a good old boogie and sway back and forth, scream singing it. And, you know, being on Absolute Radio Country, that song comes up a lot. So I get to think of Max a lot. And I don't dedicate it to him every time on air, But I always think of him every single time I play it. And so that's a lovely thing to be able to do.
I'm going to think of him now every time I hear it too.
I'll do.
What other sort of coping mechanisms have you sort of learnt to cope with that anxiety and any other anxiety that you might...
Yeah, I think I have generalized anxiety that you were talking about earlier, Wendy, and it manifests itself in a lot of different ways. One of the ways is social anxiety, which I think that for anybody, any of us kind of in this profession, but also so many different professions that have to be kind of forward-facing and do presentations at work or anything like that. People are probably quite shocked that I have social anxiety, but it's something that I've kind of always had, and I've always battled through it. And my way when I was younger was to kind of, you know, enter the room with the door slamming open and taking over and being kind of the life of the party and the center of attention. And as you get older, that becomes more and more difficult to do. But I still very much kind of have to turn it on. And it's not that I don't want to go to these social things. It's more that I worry, how am I going to come across? Do I have anything to say to anybody? Do I have the energy to kind of bring it up to this level that I need to bring it up to? And more often than not, I'm really glad that I went and I have a really good time. But also more often than not, I'll get home and think about, oh, did I say that? Oh no, I said the wrong thing. Did they understand what I meant by that? And the way that I've kind of started dealing with that sort of stuff is mindfulness and meditation. You know, I've got all the apps, and Jay, I can absolutely relate with when it comes to ASMR. I spend a lot of time at night listening to ASMR, but I almost do it before I get there. So if I'm on the tube going to whatever social event it is, whether it's just somebody else's party that I'm going to, or whether it's something that I'm maybe DJing at or presenting something at, I start on the train, you know, headphones in, a brief meditation from one of the apps, and then on the walk from the train to the venue, kind of counting my breaths, deep breathing. And actually one time I got to talking about Max, I got to the door of one of the club nights, and I was still doing my kind of deep breathing, and security was letting me in or whatever, and Max came to the door, and I guess I was deep breathing a little bit too deep, because he went, are you okay? What are you doing? And I thought, oh no, he's caught my coping mechanism, because I do have to do that a lot.
And does that genuinely help you? Can you bring yourself back into the moment, you know, get yourself back?
I can, but I think it's also important for people to hear that it's also not easy. Actually, a therapist said to me ages ago, because, you know, being American, we love therapy. We have no shame about therapy. And a therapist said to me once, you're catastrophizing. And I'd never heard that word before. And that was also like a light going off. You know, I could be crossing the street waiting at a crosswalk, and without even trying, I would imagine that a truck veered off and knocked me down and broke my leg. And, you know, whatever it was, I would go from zero to the worst possible thing that could happen, you know, within 5 seconds. And it wasn't until a therapist said, you're catastrophizing, that I thought, yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. So now if those thoughts start to come in, I'll just be like, oh, you're catastrophizing. And it almost instantly goes away.
Can I just bring Wendy in there? Because Baylen, that's amazing. That's a lot to unpack there.
I know, I mean, I've got them all. Anything else? I've got them all.
But I'm ticking off loads of them as well. Can we shine a spotlight on the social anxiety?
I think it comes back to fear again. There's fear. Am I going to say the right thing, do the right thing? Fear and shame that somehow we're not really feeling that how we are and what we do is okay. That we give ourselves a kind of, you know, checklist of things we must say, mustn't say. And I think what you just said there about this stuff takes work, of course it does. Because those thought processes at some time probably was looking after you.
I also loved, Baylen, some of the coping mechanisms you've worked on over the years. I remember when I was talking to my doctor and some of the advice I was given about, well, and my therapist, about, you know, exercise and maybe drinking less. And I don't need to drink less. I don't know exercise, no, but actually they're part of my coping. Exercise works wonders, and cutting back the drinking, actually has helped me enormously.
There's loads of science emerging now around even just being in nature. So it's kind of came from Japan, this thing called forest bathing, which isn't going into the forest without your clothes on. It sounds a bit like you would, wouldn't it? Or going into the forest with your swimming posse on.
Just making notes here, yes.
It means being in nature where actually being able to scientifically proven to kind of lower your heart rate, actually to have a physiological impact. Because let's not forget that anxiety isn't all in the head. It's all in the body as well.
Catch up on our Time to Listen series at absoluteradio.co.uk or on the free Absolute Radio app.
Now, I want to hand over the reins to a long-term friend of mine, Leona Graham. We've been very open and honest over the years we've known each other about, you know, how we feel. As you mentioned earlier, we quite often WhatsApp each other. So, what would you like to share with us?
Thank you, Sturge. I want to talk about insomnia, which is something I've had since my 20s. So, a long, long time. And I can usually get to sleep, but then I'll wake up any time between sort of 1 and 3 a.m. and then I'll probably stay awake for the rest of the night or possibly just fall asleep just before the alarm goes off, which is really annoying.
Yeah.
Then this can happen again the next night, and it can happen a few nights in a row. So the first time it happens, I can cope the next day. But when it's happened for a few times in succession, I'm just a complete mess and I still have to do everything that I have to do during my day. I've got children and responsibilities, and you know, I could say I couldn't do my radio show, but I always still do it.
It's interesting you say, because obviously the radio show, I'm not saying we do it on autopilot, but we can just about get through a radio show. When you don't sleep, when one doesn't sleep, it really, I mean, it turns your brain to absolute mush, doesn't it?
Oh, it does.
And it's physical as well.
Yes, it's physical, definitely. And by the end of the week, I'm a total mess. And the reason this happens to me is because something might happen during the day. I suppose we call them a trigger. And it will get my adrenaline going, and it can be anything from an email or a dispute with somebody or something could annoy me or a bit of road rage or something like that. And once that adrenaline has risen to a certain level in me, even if I try all my techniques to calm down during the day, it will re-emerge itself about 1 a.m. and it will just pop up. Oh, here I am, that adrenaline you had earlier, I'm coming back now to wake you up for the rest of the night.
And does it come back to remind you of things that maybe you should have done, the way you should have handled that?
Oh, yes, I'm definitely a woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Okay.
I'll go through all the different things that I should have done and how I should have done this differently and why did I do that, and then I wouldn't be in this mess now. So, you know, I've learnt now just to get up and go downstairs and perhaps fuss the dogs and have some warm milk or something, but I have to accept that I'm not going to go back to sleep. And just coming back to my childhood, when I was at school, they diagnosed me as hyperactive. And I don't know if today that would mean ADHD, but one of my sons has got ADHD. So I just feel like that's all part of the same thing. I've got a sort of hyperactive body and mind, and I find it very difficult to quieten it down.
We have discussed this before, and you gave me a great piece of advice. You said get some small headphones and then just listen to a podcast or something you don't particularly care about and just listen to that. And actually, it does work for me, because when I have my mild insomnia compared to you, just listening to something or ASMR, like Jay suggested, does that work for you?
Yeah, I have headphones in all night, every night. Just
as do you?
Yeah, every single night.
And wow.
I have Audible on, so I have whole books. And other things I might do are, during the day when my adrenaline has been risen, I'll try and do some calming techniques like what you've been doing, Baylen, and trying to sort of calm myself down. Mm. And me and my son Dexter, we have this book called Zen, The Art of Simple Living. And each day we try and go through this anyway, and we'll just pick a chapter at random.
And we should explain, Dexter is your youngest son.
Yeah, he's 9.
And like you say, you feel that he is very like you.
I can relate to everything about him.
Okay.
And he likes the fact that I can relate to him, and he says it's our thing, you know.
So this is your thing, you two.
Yeah.
And you have a little moment of calm with your book.
Yes.
Oh, that's
so
lovely.
You know, just before he goes to bed, we'll pick a page at random.
Yeah.
And we'll go through this chapter. And he's very much into his crystals as well, as am I, and I always have some on me. Got some on me today, and what I call sort of hippie techniques. We try and find peace and love, you
but
know,
that's very much as well. Yeah. Can I bring Wendy in now?
Yeah.
That mindfulness,
yeah.
Because like you say, even doing all of these, if the adrenaline hits you at 1 o'clock in the morning, then you're up.
That's it. I mean, again, that's something that is helpful, adrenaline, in the right time, the right moment. is really good for you. It's that fight, flight, freeze situation that we will all know about. You know, you're in danger or you need to be alert for something. Your adrenaline comes, it helps you get through it. But actually, if it's coming at times when you're meant to sleep, then, yeah, of course, you're facing all those challenges. But it sounds like you've worked around it a lot now. But at the same time, you do need some space to rest and repair.
You also mentioned, as I mentioned earlier on, I got really like, oh, exercise, that's supposed to help. It's really helped me. And again, talking about Dexter, you thought maybe something like karate would really help him. But then you decided, oh, I might give it a go too. And I heard you saying on the radio not long ago how you did your first grading.
Yeah, Dexter and I both do karate, which is great for mental health as well, because there's lots of mantras about it as well, a bit like mindfulness, but it's very practical. So you are literally punching and fighting and getting out all of that aggression. I feel like I've got a lot of anger inside of me and I can bring that out.
Well, can we talk about that, Wendy? Because you mentioned with the anxiety, but also anger as well, and trying to get that out. We all do that.
There's kind of accepted wisdom around depression in a sort of simplistic, if you like, way of thinking about it. But sometimes it's like, if anxiety is worrying about the future, depression is worrying about the past. And it's where you're thinking about what you could have done, should have done, and actually need to kind of understand. Again, back to that thing, we like to make sense of things. And often, if we're worrying about the past, we've got stuck in one particular narrative about something.
I think that's why it's much worse in the middle of the night, because I've got nobody... I can't message anybody because they're all asleep.
I mean, on our Calm website, we have some tools and guides that help, but there's like one that's called Offload Your Thoughts, because this whole idea as well of like writing your worries down is a really helpful thing, because it's then quietening the mind, saying, I'm not telling you to forget about this. I'm going to put it here and we'll deal with it later. Or usually by the later, you'll have forgotten about it.
I really like the sound of that, Leona.
Yes, I've done that before, actually. I've sent an email, not to
anyone in particular.
The boss, that's by mistake. Don't ever do that. But, you know, sent an email, perhaps have it in the drafts, and then got it out of my head, and then the next day I can read it and think, oh, actually, I was overreacting. I don't think I'll send that.
Lists can do that as well, I think, sometimes, when you're turning things over in your head, just making a list.
I love a list,
going,
Balin.
I love a list.
This
in my head now. I put it there.
I've got a list book.
Oh.
Yeah. At one point, I had to get rid of the list book because it took over. but yes, have a list, but don't let it take over.
Okay.
I think that I completely empathise with what you're saying, though, with the whole, you know, listening to audible and being, you know, getting taken away. You know, it kind of like what I was saying, that, you know, if I feel anxious during the day, and you said to me, you know, do you go to see a film or something like that? Well, I don't, but when I do, that is a very good example of, suddenly I don't worry anymore because I can't do anything because I'm distracted now. I'm like, I'm in the cinema now, I'm watching a film, I can't do anything. You know, taking myself out of the situation, I find that very helpful as well.
And just turn on the radio.
Absolutely.
But you know, you're never alone with the radio, are you? And I think that's another thing with anxiety.
Do you know what that shows? That is true. Do you remember when I was doing the Brighton Place up and I had some terrible time? This renovation was just from hell. Huge, huge stress. And I would listen to your request show and it just took me out of it. It did work.
Thank you.
Oh. Absolute Radio. Time to listen.
I'm Claire Sturgis, and this has been Time to Listen on Absolute Radio for Mental Health Awareness Week. You can find out more at absoluteradio.co.uk/time to listen, and there you'll get support, advice and access to services 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I also want to say thank you to everyone who took part today. So we start with Jay. Thank you so much, Jay. That was...
Oh, thank you, Sturge.
I mean, it's not been easy, has it? But I've really enjoyed it, if that makes sense.
Yes, there's been a moment or two that I felt like I was going to cry, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, I think I did, Jay. Yeah, well, I think I did. but thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Balin, thank you again for sharing your story about Max. And also, I mean, you know, there was a lot to take in there, so I'm going to have to listen back again, I think.
Yes. See, it's funny, this anxiety thing, because now I'm sitting here thinking, I revealed too much.
No.
You know,
no.
Isn't it amazing, though? Like, it shows you how anxiety works, is that we've had this really lovely conversation with really lovely people, and it's easy to start second-guessing yourself already. It's just how... the whole thing works, which is why we're doing this.
Exactly. And Leona, thank you so much. And thank Dexter as well, of course.
I will. Thank you for having us.
And I know insomnia is going to be an ongoing problem. We've discussed it before, but I hope you get a little bit better night's sleep tonight.
Thank you. I think I will.
And Wendy, I can't thank you enough from the Campaign Against Living Miserably. You do amazing work, and you've been so amazing here today, and I've learned so much. Thank you so much.
And thank you for doing this, actually, because you're standing up against misery, against suicide, against anxiety with a charity like us, and you know, make all the difference for people to hear that you also struggle with things, but there are ways of making things better.
And I hope everyone listening today and tonight, if you've heard just something that you can identify with, I really, really hope you found some comfort out of listening. I want to say a big thank you to Jay Lawrence, Baylin Leonard and Leona Graham for sharing their experiences with us. And of course, a massive thank you to Wendy Robinson too, from the charity Calm, who helped guide the conversation. If you missed any of the show or would like to listen back, you can download the free Absolute Radio app.
This is Time to Listen on Absolute Radio.